But I'm not joking when I say this. If you're ever working with me and I hear you treat another colleague with disrespect, talk down to someone, I promise you I will fire you on the spot. On the spot. No ifs, ands, or buts.
You know, it's very high standard to just say, I will fire you on the spot if you ever disrespect anyone. He said it. He said it on day one. And if you have a cabinet member of all people violating that standard and you are equivocating, people are going to be skeptical of how much you meant it.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch. Today,
this is the highest level exit from the Biden administration to date.
The resignation of top science advisor Eric Lander.
Eric Lander.
Now out after that internal investigation showed he mistreated and bullied his staff.
Reporter Alex Thompson, who broke the story of Lander's misconduct.
We published it Monday morning. And when you put something like that in the world, you don't know what's going to happen. And so I just sort of waited. And then by the end of the day, he had announced the resignation.
Alex is here to tell me how he did it, the anatomy of a scoop, and what's next for the Office of Science and Technology. But first, we just got to start with the who. So, Alex, could you quickly give me Eric Lander's bio?
He's one of the most decorated and renowned scientists in the country. And he won the MacArthur Genius Grant at 30 in 1987. He was a huge player in the mapping the human genome in the late 90s, early 2000s. Then went on and was very much involved in the development of the CRISPR gene editing technology. And had also been on the board of the Biden Cancer Initiative. I've been working on this since November, just sort of chipping away, you know, slowly but building, you know, trust with some of these sources who were taking a big risk by talking to me, you know, some of whom, you know, were risking their careers in some cases, but they felt it was important. And so we were basically at the 10-yard line last Friday when I had enough sources that I felt comfortable start cold calling people whom I was like taking a chance they might talk. And knowing that it was likely that somebody was going to be a good soldier and report it up the chain. And that's what happened. So on Friday, they finally realized the extent of the story. They realized that I knew about the investigation, the internal investigation, and they knew I knew about its findings. And that's when Eric Lander, the head of the Office of Science and Technology and a cabinet member, that's when he attempted to preempt my story by sending an all-staff email on Friday night to, you know, roughly 140 people. And once he did that, my weekend was ruined.
And can you just detail for me what the Office of Science and Technology is, like how important it is, what they do specifically?
The Office of Science and Technology policy, unlike some other departments in the federal government, is located within the White House, the executive office of the president. And as a result, you know, it has proximity to power. And it has about 140 people. And, you know, every OSCP is different. But in this case, Biden had put a lot of power into OSTP. He, for the first time ever, elevated Lander, the head of it, to cabinet rank. That never happened before.
Oh, I didn't realize that was unprecedented.
Yeah, had never happened in the history of OSTP.
Wow.
He also put him in charge of the Biden cancer moonshot, which is a huge personal priority for Joe Biden. And they just had a huge launch event just last week where he addressed Dr. Lander's role in that initiative. And he also had put Dr. Lander in charge of like future pandemic planning, which is, you know, the sort of plan of not about COVID-19, but about, you know, COVID-37 or whatever.
Leak. Could you take me back to November when this investigation starts for you?
I had written a shorter story about Eric Lander sort of driving other people in the White House nuts, that he was impulsive and taking unilateral actions and saying that he was doing X on the White House's behalf without ever telling some people in the White House. This really happened where, you know, the White House had cut a deal on future pandemic funding. And then he went to the Hill and started trying to renegotiate the deal. Anyway, so the idea was like, hey, this is, you know, a guy that's sort of driving everyone nuts. After that, I received an email from an anonymous account, and I still actually don't know who this person was. Mm. And they said, you're missing the bigger story here. The way that this is being thought of is that he's just sort of a bumbling scientist who doesn't understand how government works. And it's being used to excuse what is serious behavior problems. You need to, like, look into that. And I started looking into it.
And does the internal investigation start with a complaint from the former Office of Science and Technology General Counsel, Rachel Wallace?
Yes. Last September, Rachel Wallace, who then was general counsel and COO of OSTP, was demoted to deputy counsel. Mm-hmm. Soon after that, she filed a complaint. She filed a complaint on gender-based discrimination, on retaliation, on bullying. Now, the investigation didn't find gender-based discrimination, but it did find that his behavior and the behavior of OSTP leadership violated the White House's own guidelines. And so they found significant evidence of bullying, demeaning, raising his voice, multiple instances of women saying that he had spoken to them in demeaning ways. And that investigation was concluded in December.
So catch me up to now. On Monday, you published this big piece detailing not just Lander's behavior, but the fact that there had been this investigation back in December that wasn't made public.
They didn't necessarily have to make such an investigation public. You know, it's an HR issue. I think the reason why it ended up becoming public is because a lot of the people inside the government felt that they did the right thing, right? Which is they followed the rules. They filed an HR complaint. They stayed within the guidelines, and the systems that are set up to protect employees failed them, is how they felt. I was sort of the person of last resort, or the avenue of last resort, in order to get attention on this matter.
So then on Monday it publishes, and it's something Jen Psaki is really pressed on at the briefing that day.
I woke up, and actually the day started badly, because I had gotten a message from a source who read the story and was disappointed. And I think the person really just wanted, I think in their words, they just like, you know, you should have hit him harder. This isn't going to make a difference. People are just going to shrug it off. Obviously, this person had trusted me with their story. And I wrote it in what I thought was the best way that I thought was airtight and bulletproof and undeniable.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously them being disappointed after trusting me, you know, that sort of sucked to hear, right? I was very proud of the story, but that's how they felt when they first read it. The way this ties into the Psaki briefing is that I was already set to go to the briefing that day anyway. It was my turn just by coincidence. You know, when I sat down, I definitely had that message in the back of my head. I need to make sure that I really push her here and really make them answer the question, which is in the, and the way I phrased it was, what is your message to the people in the White House that took President Biden at his word when he said he would fire people that disrespected their colleagues? Like, you know, maybe it's, maybe you just shrug it off as political rhetoric, but some people, I can tell you, really believed that. And so the way I phrased the question was very much with those sources in mind. Like, what is your message to them?
I'm curious for more of the private reaction that you've been trying to gather from your sources behind the scenes. You were also leaked a recording of an internal meeting that kind of addressed your article, right?
Yeah, so the recording I have is basically like senior OSTP staff from Monday morning, right after the story comes out, and grappling with what to do next. And it's striking because everyone there is trying to grapple with being part of a culture like this. And it was also striking that the chief of staff in the recording said something along the lines of like, you know, I was surprised by some of the things in the story, but I also wasn't surprised about everything.
So on Tuesday, there was a congressional hearing on, among other things, funding for Biden's top health priority, this multi-billion dollar agency focused on preventing cancer and Alzheimer's, the sort of cancer moonshot. Eric Lander was at the center of that. So to what degree do you think that his resignation affects the future of that agency or these like massive health priorities?
Well, first of all, there's a little bit of sort of interesting backstory in the hearing because I think they announced the hearing about a week or two ago. And we thought about the story and we very much intentionally wanted to publish it before the hearing. So because we thought it would bring more attention to the story. And I assumed he was never going to let me interview him. I mean, I tried, but I assumed he would. But it was a way to get him to publicly address some of these claims. So the timing was very intentional on our part. Once they announced the hearing, we really wanted to get the story out before them.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of how this will affect the president's main project, I would say that there are many people in the building that think his departure will actually help it. Because he was... It's not like they're not going to have a head of OSTP, but he had alienated and frustrated so many people in the Biden administration and was just not seen as a team player that a lot of people just felt that ultimately his behavior wasn't just toxic, but it actually was hurting the work product.
When he was sworn in, Biden seemed to really want to draw a harsh line in the sand between his administration and Trump's and gave that now famous line about staff being fired, you know, on the spot for bad conduct. But the fact that it took a while for Lander to resign after the investigation's findings seems to indicate that the White House had difficulty fulfilling that promise. It seems like this behavior was only treated as unacceptable when the media found out about it.
Yes, and they didn't follow through on it when the investigation concluded in December and January. They didn't follow through on it when the story initially came out. They only followed through on it 15 hours later. And that's, I think that's why my sources, you know, current and former OSTP staffers, there was definitely a divide. And some people told me, listen, I really believe that if Biden knew, he would fire them. Like, he would fire him. Like, they believe that Biden meant it and is a man of his word. And the only reason Lander hadn't been fired is because he has powerful allies that had shielded the knowledge from Biden himself. And there were other sources that just felt that it was all political rhetoric and that it was all just a big show to try to show a difference with Trump. And that, honestly, they really didn't mean it.
Yeah.
The one sign when I was reporting the story that made me think that they might ultimately ask for his resignation or push him out was the White House sent me these statements defending him on Sunday night, you know, from a White House spokesperson, from an OSTP spokesperson. And often I just let that go, you know, if they're a spokesperson, you know, I don't make them attach their name to it. But for something like this, if you're defending someone given these allegations, I asked them both, I said, I want you to put your name on this. And they both said no. And the fact that the White House and OSTP were, their spokespeople were unwilling to have their names on statements defending him, or at least defending the White House's conduct, I thought was telling and suggested that, you know, maybe he was not going to last.
Alex Thompson, thank you so much for talking with me.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Also today, long-awaited legislation overhauling the Postal Service's finances and operations sailed through the House on Tuesday. The bipartisan legislation passed the chamber in a 342-92 vote, despite controversy over the head of the Postal Service that had threatened to tank Republican support for the legislation. And a government commission tasked with addressing the opioid crisis in the United States is warning that spiraling overdose deaths threaten U.S. national security and economic well-being. The Commission on Combating Synthetic Opioid Trafficking called for a decisive shift in U.S. policy to reduce the rising numbers of synthetic opioid overdose deaths. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.